Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. Yes, it's Thursday evening, and I'm on the air. I thought this was an important topic, taxes. People don't like to think about it, but it creeps up on you, and you have to do it. And if you don't do it, well, we know of stories where people have been hunted down, so to speak, by the IRS, and they got their money. I want to say thank you to our special guest this evening. We have Mrs. Beverly Bay. She's a senior tax advisor with H&R Block. And we also have Joel Schneier, if I'm saying your last name correctly, Joel?
Yes, you are.
Very good. Okay. He's a tax advisor also with H&R Block. Thank you so much for being on this evening.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Well, according to the IRS, last year, 2008, the average tax refund was about $2,700, and they gave away estimated $261.32 billion in refunds last year. So please file your taxes because you may get some money back. And I know people are a little afraid. There's a lot of forms you need. There's a lot of what status am I? What kind of deductions? We're going to try to cover a couple things this evening. Questions that people frequently have. I want to direct the question to Mrs. Bay. I guess first question I want to deal with is, before you even start your taxes, what documents should you gather?
Okay, one of the most important documents that people get is the Social Security card with identity theft in order. Social Security card is very important, and we like to see it when a client first comes in to see us. Once they've established a reputation with, they don't always have to bring it, but they should have that, and that should be confirmed also on your W-2.
Okay. And what else should they bring to the table with them?
Well, in addition, they should have the W-2. If they're not paid by an employer, if they're self-employed, then in most cases they would have a 1099, which is a form which does not take out taxes, but you still have to report it. And also any identification with the Patriot Act, we have to have current ID, usually a identity which has been provided by the state.
Okay, like a driver's license,
non-driver's ID.
Okay.
All of the above.
And I guess they should bring receipts if they have receipts.
Business. Return, yeah, receipts are very important, you know.
Okay. Now, how does somebody know what status they should file? I mean, Joel, I'll ask you this. What if I'm married and I can file separately or jointly? I mean, what are the pros and cons of something, situation like that if you're married?
Okay, well, if a couple is married, it's usually to their benefit to file jointly because there are a number of deductions and credits that they would be entitled to filing jointly that they would not be able to claim filing separately. In almost all cases, it is better. The reason why some people would file separately, if one of them has a debt,
okay,
that the other half of the couple does not want to be liable for, in terms of having their refund withheld, that would be one reason to file separately. Some couples who are in the process of separation or divorce, whether they're still married, often prefer to file separately as well.
So, at what say I decided to get separated in November, and I'm filing my taxes for this year. I mean, what do I do jointly?
Okay, well, you're still assuming you're not legally separated. You're still considered married. So your choices. So I'm glad you mentioned November. Because let's say as many couples that separate have children. Now, if the couple separates in the second half of the year, they would still have to file married, either married filing separately or married filing jointly. However, if they did not live together the last 6 months of the year, them who's claiming children, or other dependents, they file head of household.
Okay. I think somebody's trying to get in touch with you guys now to file their taxes.
Right. Well, other phones that can take it up. It's a busy audit.
Yeah. So now, in terms of single or head of household, I'm a single mother. How would I choose between single or head of household? Which one is to my benefit?
Household, because it's a higher deduction. The deduction for head of household is $8,000. So because
okay.
you have a child, you can file as head of household.
Okay.
And that also includes if you're supporting aging parent.
An aging, oh, that was my other question. If you have now how do you define dependent? That's a really important question. People always, does the child live with them half the year, all the year, or did you take care of your parent, or maybe you had a niece or a nephew? I mean, how many months of the year does somebody have to stay with you and you're caring for them to be considered a dependent?
Well, to how many months a year in order for you to claim them would be six or more, but as far as being a dependent, you have to contribute more than half of their support.
Half
more
of their support. Okay. Now, what if I got my husband stayed home and took care of my daughter, and in terms of child care, how do you deal with that? I mean, I know there's an issue that it can't be a relative that's taking care of the
dependent. No, well, if you wanted to, for the child and dependent care credit is available for those who send their pay for someone to watch their children, whether it's an individual or whether it's at a daycare center. But the point of the deduction, or I should say the child dependent care credit, is so that the parent or parents can work. So if you're filing married, filing jointly, then both parents must work in order to take the child and dependent care credit. If you're filing head of household and you're supporting a child, then a child under the age of 13, that includes after school program. And if you're filing head of household, in all cases, as long as you're working, you can claim that child and dependent care credit. And one other thing about child and dependent care credit, it's not bound by income. Most credits and many deductions are affected by and in some cases expire the taxpayer or taxpayers are making income is too high. Whereas
too high.
With child dependent care credit, the percent varies according to the income, but one can always claim it if one is paying otherwise qualifies.
Okay. Well, let's go back a little bit. Now, we figured out what kind of status we might want to file. Now, what types of forms? There's a 1040, the 1040A, 1040EZ. How do you know what form to start with? Is that based on your filing status?
The 1040EZ is for a single person with no dependents. There are a limited number of questions, and you can go through it really well. We could really quickly. It's not a long form.
Okay.
The long form, the long form, the 1040 is for people, if you have your own business, if you have...
itemize your deductions.
Right, if you're itemizing, if you have capital gains, those things of that nature require the longer form.
And a little more complex.
Yeah, more complex. Yeah, more different sources of income, various credits. And the 1040A form is in the middle. Like, there are a few of the things.
Unemployment, you need
right.
the 1040A. You know, several things that can't be, that there are no place for it on the 1040EZ, even if you are single, you'd have to do the 1040A.
Well, that's a good thing you brought up, unemployment. I mean, a lot of people, because of this recession, are unemployed this past year. I mean, record numbers. And how does that work? If you're receiving unemployment, that's considered income? It's not considered income?
It's
how
considered
does somebody
income.
Okay.
But it's considered ordinary income.
Okay.
It's not considered earned income, so having unemployment would reduce. If a person is otherwise entitled to earned income credit, receiving unemployment would reduce that. And if let's say if they wanted to contribute to an IRA or which I don't know. Given the economy, a lot of people are holding off on.
Yeah, I don't think that a lot of people are interested in that.
Would need to have earned income in order to do that. And
Okay. Unemployment
does not qualify. And one other thing, unemployment compensation is not taxable to the state.
Okay. Now, what are some of the mistakes that you find when people come in? They might have started their return, and they probably got frustrated and said, you know what, I better just go see somebody. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see? I know you mentioned having your Social Security card, making sure that's correct, but what are some other mistakes that people do?
One of the things that I notice is people transpose numbers, mathematical errors, you know, or transposing the numbers when they present their, if they don't give us, if it's a returning client, we'd have their Social Security number in there. System, but one of the reasons why we like to see the card, because sometimes people, even their own children, they transpose numbers.
Mm.
Big mistake. The IRS will send the return right back if the numbers aren't correct.
Okay.
And also, a common mistake I've seen is people just omit information, omit income figures that they are required to include.
But don't try to cut corners is what you're saying. You got to put everything down because...
cases, I don't think it's deliberate. They just have a big stack of papers, and it's easy to overlook a couple of numbers here and there.
So what do you think people should do throughout the year? Like now, okay, we're filing our taxes now, but for this coming year, 2009, I mean, should people keep receipts in, like, little envelopes? I mean, should they start now, really, in dealing with for next year? In terms of organizing their paperwork and forms and when they're dealing with, like, say they go to the doctor and they pay a copay, I mean, should they hold on to that receipt instead of waiting until the end of the year in a special place?
Definitely. Yeah, I think you ought to have one place if you can have a box or an envelope where you keep everything. Some of my clients come in and they have everything that says anything that has anything to do with taxes. They put it all in one place, a big envelope or box, or just keep everything together in one place that you even think might have to do with the tax throughout the year.
Right, yeah, it definitely pays to be well organized
right.
And to keep records in a central place.
Better more than less.
Yeah.
More than less. Now, you mentioned, Joel, about the earned income credit, and people wonder who can qualify for that. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, well, the earned income credit is a credit for lower income tax payers. If a person is single with no dependents, they must be at least, number one, they would have to be at least the age 25, and it's kind of like a bell-shaped curve, and as the earned income is, as it rises
higher.
Up from zero, it continues to increase, and it's zero, and then at a certain point, it declines, and it zeroes out for a single person at it zeroes out for a single person around 12,000.
Okay.
For a head of household with one child, it the maximum is income for earned income credit is 34,000.
If you're filing head of household, which is not married, correct?
Right.
That's not
could
somebody
be married, but separated, not living.
Could be married, but separated. Okay. Then the amount, again, is 30.
Actually, the exact amount is 33,995, where it's zeroed out.
33. Okay. Now,
and for married filing jointly with one child, it's 36,995 with more than one qualifying child. And so earned income credit, whether you have, let's say if you otherwise qualify for earned income credit with two children, having five children will not get you additional earned income credit.
Okay, now, is there a special form?
With two
or
children, it maxes out with married filing jointly at 41,646. And for a single head of household, it's 38,646.
Okay.
So that's
so you
where
have
it maxes
a potential.
Out.
It maxes out at a certain rate.
I should say it zeroes out at those numbers.
It's a special form, or is it a line on one of the 1040?
It's required to be filed, yes.
Okay. And now, a lot of people, we talked about the child care credit. Now, that's different than dependent. If your child is older than 13, you can still get some type of child dependent credit, right, which is different than child care credit.
Yes. Child tax credit is available. It's up to $1,000 per child.
Up to three children, max. Up to three children, you can get the child tax credit. So you could have a higher income and not get the other credit, earned income credit, and get $3,000 in the child credit.
Now, is that only for if your children are under 13, or if
up to 17.
Okay. Let's talk about a little bit about deductions. I know that's a big thing. People are really like, where can I get deductions? You know, child care credit, student loan interest. There's a special form you should get at the end of the year, yes, if you paid interest on your student loan?
In 98E, yes.
Okay, and if you
and you can match,
know,
you can deduct up to $2,500. That's the max. If you pay $3,000 in student loan fee, the max is $2,500 that you can deduct.
$2,500.
Yeah,
now,
per year.
Now, is that for the parent or is that for the child or whoever
pays the loans?
Whoever pays the loan. Okay. So an adult going to college
parents
who has
obtained the loans while the students are still, you know, they don't have subsidized loans and they're
right.
paying off loans while their children are still in school. So
yes. So the parent could be going to school and have had
yes.
a loan, and then the student or the dependent also. So does the person say a parent was paying off their own personal student loan, but also paying their child's loan, is it double deductible or?
Max
per child, $2,500 per child.
Just $2,500, okay, per child.
I should say, per student.
Per student, okay.
So,
now, what about medical expenses? Can you deduct your premiums that you pay for your health insurance?
Yes, you can.
Now, yeah, they can be, yes. However, it's important to note that for medical expenses, only amounts in excess of 7.5% of your adjusted gross income can be deducted at all. So in other words, if your income was, let's say, $60,000 and you had $5,000 worth of medical expenses, you would subtract 7.5% of $60,000 or $4,500 from the $5,000, and you would only be able to deduct $500 of those. Of that.
Okay. Do a lot of people are a lot of people eligible for that, do you think, that come into your office?
Some are, yes. Some
not as many people as they think. People think usually if they have a high a medical year, they think automatically that when the things have been covered in insurance and then they have to go into their pocket, they usually automatically think they have a deduction, but they don't realize that it's based on their salary and the percentage. So you could come in and if you're, like, I'll use easy one, $100,000. If you made $100,000, you could only deduct over $7,500. So if you had an operation and you paid out of pocket $5,000, that wouldn't be you wouldn't be able to claim that because it's not over $7,500. So that still would not be a deduction on your taxes.
Mm. Joel, you were going to say something about the medical expenses?
Yes. In addition to what Beverly just said, in order to deduct medical expenses, let's say you have some medical expenses in excess of the threshold of 7.5% of your income, that deductible amount plus your other itemized deductions, such as state and local income taxes paid, mortgage interest, real estate tax, charitable contributions, the sum of all of those would still have to be greater than your standard deduction for it to benefit you at all. Because
now, what's your standard deduction for a single person with no dependents?
$5,450.
Okay.
And for head of household, it's $8,000, and for married filing jointly, it's $10,900. And everyone, any taxpayer or couple that they're filing jointly, has a choice between taking their standard deduction, subtracting their standard deduction from their income, or subtracting the sum of their itemized deductions from their income. And it's a benefit to the taxpayer to subtract the greater number to bring their taxable income lower.
Right. Now, also, people can deduct charitable contributions, but I know that gets a little confusing. I mean, if I took a bag of clothes to a place but I didn't get a receipt, or maybe I gave money to organization. Does it matter whether I gave $5 or $20?
Get a receipt, or it's best to say give a pay in a check if your deduction, I believe it's over $250.
Yeah.
You have to have, you know, a written check.
Some
be
kind
good
of documentation.
You take
okay.
a bag of clothing. Usually, you determine the value, and you know whether it's a thrift market value or what their degrees of determining what the value of the clothing are, and it's usually determined by you. When you take it to the thrift store, they ask you, but they will give you a receipt.
Yes. Now, what about people claiming a home office? I mean, sometimes I use my computer maybe for work, but sometimes I surf and shop. I mean, how do you decide whether you can claim a home office or not?
Do you have a specific place where you do it, and is that set aside and no other activities go on in this place? That's the first. Actually, it has to be for the benefit of your employer, and then if you use this space, you can't, like, you couldn't say use it today in the nighttime for business, and in the morning it's where you put your makeup on or where you put meals.
Okay.
So in other words,
it can't be dual purpose.
You should have an
separate.
If you're considering taking that home office deduction, if you're taking it as an employee, number one, it has to be for the convenience of the employer.
Right.
So maybe they don't have enough desks or computers at the office or something, or some other reason why it's their convenience. Number two, it has to be an area that's used regularly
exclusively
for business, which means that if you have a little home office that looks like a home office, if someone were to come and ask and to take a look, that would be legitimate. If you sit at your kitchen table with a laptop, that's not a home office.
Okay. Now, what about people a lot of times make mistakes and they're like, uh-oh, I've already filed my taxes, maybe even from last year. Can you do an amendment or modify your taxes from, say, even last year or a different tax year?
Yes, you
can. You can modify it for up to 3 years going back. And I've done a lot. I think we've all done a number of amendments this year for lots of people. And one thing that H&R Block is offering this year, and I think we did last year as well, it's called the Second Look, in which we review a prior year tax return or a current year tax return that was prepared outside of H&R Block. And if we do find errors on it, we would offer to do an amendment, and we, in many cases, we get additional refund money that's quite substantial for people. So, some cases they owe, but at least it's better. Even if the person owes, it's better they find out from us than wait for the IRS to contact them.
And
in addition,
interest has accrued.
if the return has been filed right, and there we find no errors, they have H&R Block's guarantee. So, in the case of an audit, you know, you have the backing of H&R Block that, you know, the work is correct.
Now, what's your phone number there at your office if people wanted to call and make an appointment?
What did you say? I'm sorry.
What's your phone number and address of your office where you guys are located if people wanted to come and ask questions?
1517 Chestnut Street. Our phone number is area code 215-751-9129. We're open Monday to Friday, 9 to 9. Saturday and Sunday, 9 till 5, and beginning probably the last week of the tax season, we'll be open probably from 8 to 10, but that can be confirmed by calling in this number.
Okay, say the number again, Mrs. Bay.
215-751-9129.
Now, what if you owe money and it's a little too much, like, you know, maybe you owe, you know, a couple thousand dollars, you find out, but you don't have that money now. There's an exemption you can file, yes or no?
Well, okay. Well, there is an extension. Those are a separate question.
Yeah.
If you a lot of money, more than you can afford to pay by the deadline, you can arrange a payment plan by the IRS, and the best way to do that is by contacting the IRS. The second question is filing an extension. Lots of people are not quite ready. It takes them a while to get their things organized, or for whatever reason, they can file an extension, which is to file their tax returns, which is generally automatically granted. The form is 4868, and that can be found on the IRS website. If you just go to the IRS, www.irs.gov, and put in the search field 4868, you'll find that form.
And now, it gives you an additional 6 months to file.
Right, so the new deadline would be October 15th. Now,
So that's a lot of time. I didn't realize that's...
Don't get
so
too excited.
Okay, let me not get excited.
File. Well, you can get excited, but just understand that it's an extension to file. It's not, if you owe taxes, it is not an extension to pay.
Right.
You're still required to estimate how much tax you would owe and pay at least 90% of it by April 15th.
Oh, wow. So if you owed $5,000 and say, you know, right now people are unemployed, maybe they worked half this year but they got laid off, and you owe $5,000, you would still have to pay, you're saying, what, $4,000.
Right. But again, the IRS can help you,
make
arrange a payment plan if necessary.
If necessary.
But just understand that it's not the extension is not a get out of jail free card. It's an extension to file your forms. You still have to pay, make an effort to pay as much as possible of what you would owe by the April 15th deadline.
Now, what about this rebate checks? I know a lot of people are thinking maybe they're going to get a rebate check, but could you talk about that a little bit?
There aren't any new ones to our knowledge, but people who did not file last year, who did not get their money, can still get the rebate this year if they file for this year.
So if they did not file last year,
right,
that's the way the government knew who to send the rebates to based on you filing taxes last year, correct?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
The government knew who to send a rebate to because you filed taxes last year.
Right.
So if you didn't file taxes last year, you may be eligible this year, possibly.
And if you file this year, that rebate will be given to you.
Okay. Now, what about in terms of I inherited some money? Is that taxable? Say I inherited money last year. Is that taxable?
That depends, and that's one of those questions I think that they need to contact a tax professional and probably go into the office.
Come into the office.
Or call or check the website.
The IRS website.
And also H&R Block also has a website where you can ask questions
for a tax advisor, and that's www.hrblock.com?
Yes.
And the IRS website is www.irs.gov.
irs.gov.
I want to thank both of you guys for coming on tonight. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to mention to the listeners that there are a couple other places that you can go for free tax preparation through the IRS website. If you go to www.irs.gov, they have a listing for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, and that you can call 1-800-829-1040. Again, 1-800-829-1040. There's also tax counseling for the elderly through the AARP office, and it's called their TCE program. You can call 1-800-829-1040 for that, or to find your local AARP tax aid site, you can call 1-888-227-7669. And also, military personnel and their families can get free tax help. They have a volunteer income tax assistance program for military personnel and their families. So you have several options. Don't fear. There are people out there willing to help you at H&R Block and also through the IRS's website. I want to thank Mrs. Bay and Joel for coming on the show this evening. I think it was very informative. Thank you very much for coming on.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Joy.
And thank you. I want to thank the listeners on their computers and on their phones for listening this evening. I want to let everyone know that this Saturday, which is our normal air time at 11 a.m. Eastern, we're talking about women in technology business, women using technology, and we have three dynamic guests coming on. Dr. Telly Whitney, she's the president and CEO of the Anita Borg Institute for Women in Technology. We also have Avis Yates Rivers, who's had more than 25 years of experience in information technology. She's also a board member on the National Center for Women and Information Technology. And third, Lena West. She's an award-winning social media consultant, blogger, speaker, journalist, and technologist. She is also CEO and chief strategist of Zyno Media Technology. This is happening this Saturday, March 28th, in terms of it's Women's History Month. I thought it was very important to have women in technology on the show. And it'll be 11 a.m. Eastern to 11:45 Eastern here at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to mark this show as your favorite or leave comments when you listen to other shows in the archives. If you do have any questions for me or topics that you'd like to learn about, email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I hope to see you this Saturday, March 28th. We're talking about women in technology with three dynamic guests. Don't forget to tune in. See you Saturday. Have a wonderful evening, and I hope this was very informative to you. And check out H&R Block's website. Have a nice evening. Goodbye.
How do you think we did?
Pretty well.
Thank you.